Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Impact of Health Insurance on Career Decisions conference call. Your host, Steve Neeson, will now begin.
Thank you very much, Dawn. Good evening, everyone. As Dawn mentioned, my name is Steve Neeson, and I am the Senior Director of Employment Programs at the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and I'd like to welcome all of you to the fifth call in our 2013 Employment Teleconference Series. We want to start off tonight's call by thanking Robin Kemper for her sponsorship of this series. Joining me as your host on the call this evening is Barbara McKeon, Director of Employment Programs and Services with the New York City Southern New York Chapter, and Christina Forrester, the Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter. Barbara and Christina, would you like to say a few words this evening and share your contact information with us?
Sure, Steve. This is Barbara McKeon, and I would like to just welcome everyone and give you all my contact information, which is my email is B as in Barbara, M as in Mary, C, K-E-O-N, and my telephone number is 212-453-3218. Should you not be able to get your question answered, you can contact myself, Christina, or Steve.
Christina?
And this Christina, my contact information is Christina, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, dot Forster, F as in Frank, O-R, S as in Sam, T-E-R, at nmfs.org, and the phone number is 215-271-1500. Thanks.
And my contact information, I'll give it again at the end, but just so you all have it, is Steve.Nissen, it's N as in Nancy, I-S-S-E-N, at nmss.org, and phone is 202-296-5363. So please know that also this evening's call will be recorded and will be available to you at the end of this employment teleconference series. Tonight's topic, the impact of health insurance on career decisions, is something that many people with MS think about, especially when facing a change in their employment situation. We know how important insurance is to people with MS, and when leaving work or changing jobs, there are many things to take into consideration. We know that the insurance rules and options are changing as a result of the Affordable Care Act, which we'll be hearing a little bit more about tonight, but we will also learn more about what are some of the protections that you have and the things about your insurance coverage that you should find out when contemplating a change in your employment. After our speaker has completed her presentation this evening, there will be time for your questions. Please jot down any questions you have during the call so you are prepared to ask them fully during the Q&A period. Be sure to pose your question completely, as we will be muting your line once your question's asked in order to allow us to get to as many questions as possible. Also, at the end of tonight's call, we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate tonight's program. This is a short survey of only 6 questions, so please, if possible, stay on the line until the end of the program to answer the questions. We are always interested in your feedback. So, that being said, our speaker for this evening's program is Kim Calder. Kim serves as the Director of Federal Health Affairs and Insurance Policy with the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. As a specialist in health insurance and access to care for high-risk and disabled individuals, she leads the National MS Society's health care reform implementation team and advocacy efforts regarding public and private insurance at the federal level. Before joining the National MS Society, Kim held public policy positions at Cancer Care, the National Alliance of Breast Cancer Organizations, and the American Cancer Society. She received her BA from McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota, and earned a master's degree in policy studies from the New School for Social Research. She recently completed a 2-year appointment as a consumer representative to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Kim, I will turn the floor over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Steve, and good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for letting me share part of your evening with you. This topic this evening is very timely. It's always timely, but especially so now because there is so much focus on the changing landscape of health insurance because of the Affordable Care Act, which we will cover to some extent tonight. This is not a soup-to-nuts education on the law itself. We do have additional information about the law and how it relates to multiple sclerosis, a lot of information available to you from other sources. But tonight, I'm just going to limit the comments to a fairly general overview of some of the major issues regarding the impact of health insurance on career decisions. Part of the reason this is, I'm also saying this is fairly general is the law is very complex, as I'm sure you're aware, and it is just in the process of being implemented. A huge law that is implemented through the process of proposing regulations and going through a very complex regulatory process. There are many fine details, even on some topics that we'll touch on tonight, where literally the details are just not known yet. I don't think that's going to hamper your basic understanding of what you need to know at this level about the impact of health insurance on your career decisions. And actually, your very specific questions at the end, to the extent that you have some tonight, will help us learn more about what kinds of details really matter to people with MS. So please feel free to go ahead and ask the questions. Even if I have to respond later that we don't know yet, we can find out as much as possible and get information back to you, or just know that that's something that we need to be looking for so that we can post that information and make it available later on when it does become available. Finally, I just want to say bravo to all of you. Sometimes these are kind of scary topics to be thinking about, you know, the impact of your disease on career decision making. So I really want to applaud you. It means that you are thinking about the future, and sometimes that is a scary thing, but I think you understand that planning for the future when you're living with a condition like MS is really very important. The good news here is that the whole scenario in terms of the impact of health insurance on career decisions is getting easier, largely as a result of the Affordable Care Act, as we will see. Why don't you go on to the second slide, which is a pie chart. I promise you this is the only set of numbers in the whole presentation, and I won't spend too much time on it. But this pie chart is actually a very important piece of information for the MS Society and for all of our public policy work relating to health insurance. This was based on surveys that were done around 2005, 2006, 2007 on people with MS, confirmed MS, and tells us basically at that point in time, and of course that was before the major recession, but at that point in time, where were people with MS in the country getting their health insurance if they had it? What was the primary source of the coverage? Not which company or anything, but literally who provided it. And you'll see the biggest piece of the pie is this 56% called private insurance. What we mean by private insurance basically means health insurance that is provided through an employer or through a union. It's job-based insurance, or it may be health insurance policy that you or your family buys on their own. Those sources together we call private insurance. Almost everything else we kind of combine ultimately and talk about as public insurance because Medicare, the second biggest piece of the pie, that 20%, of course, is a federally operated health insurance program for people that are 65 and older or people that have a disability and have been receiving Social Security disability income for more than 24 months. But if you were to add several other components to that, from that side of the pie chart, the 5% that we know are in Medicare and Medicaid. That's the portion of the population that have both Medicare and Medicaid. That's another 5%. 4% only is uninsured. That's a very good thing. Other, that looks like a pretty big number, and that's pretty ambiguous. Other generally for our population means people that are getting health insurance from the Veterans Administration, perhaps some other state or government program. The very good news here for us as we work in policy is that very small percentage of people with MS, and this is consistent across a number of different surveys that we've done, had absolutely no health insurance at all. but it tells us also roughly that our population is split. About half of you are getting health insurance through an employer or are buying it on your own, and the other half of you are getting insurance from public sources, Medicare and Medicaid or VA or something, or some combination of those. The other takeaway from all of this is that this is very typical of a lot of different populations in the country. The number of people that are uninsured totally with MS, that 4%, that is significantly better than the general population for whom 15, 16, even as much as 17% have absolutely no health insurance. So you're overall doing better than the general population. The other thing that this illustrates, and this is common to all of us, we all change sources of health insurance coverage as we go through life. Most of us have private health insurance as children, usually from a parent, not necessarily from a parent, but very often, typically from a parent's job, or we get private insurance from our own employers as we get a little older. At some point, most of us, all of us, will probably go into Medicare. Some of us will go into Medicare before we hit 65 because we certify we're disabled. At some point, also, many of us will go into Medicaid. Medicaid is a federal and state program for people with low income. So just bear that in mind. There is nothing wrong with any of these sources of coverage. This is pretty standard stuff. Now you can skip ahead to the next slide. And I'll go through these fairly quickly. I pretty much covered these major points. Although most people with MS do have some type of health insurance, the major problem for people with MS is not that they're uninsured, but all too often they are underinsured. Underinsured does have a very technical definition in some of the literature, but generally for all purposes, it just means what you think it means. It means the health insurance that you have really isn't fully adequate to cover all of the needs that you have, all the needs that physician services, for equipment, for medicines, all the things that may be medically necessary. That's where we spend a lot of our time also in the MS Society is working on the comprehensiveness or the scope of the coverage that we all do have. We have known for years that it's been very problematic for people with MS and anyone else with a serious chronic health condition, a pre-existing condition, to make a transition from one source of coverage to the next. I used to show this pie chart with sort of a thin black line between those different types of insurance. And I would say the problem is not the coverage that you have when you're in this nice big segment in the pie chart. The problems come when you cross the black line and you're trying to get into another source of coverage, because unfortunately the system has not been very adequate and has not really served people as they're transitioning from one source of coverage to the next. The good news is that through the Affordable Care Act and a lot of other support and information, the likelihood that anyone will become uninsured, completely uninsured, now is very small, much, much smaller. That's the good news. The bad news is that, unfortunately, a lot of the out-of-pocket costs and the likelihood of being underinsured generally remains the same. We'll examine that a little bit more as we go forward, and I'm not trying to make you nervous, I promise. Overall, we'll go on to the next slide then, or the next page. Overall, the Affordable Care Act really does bring major improvements in health insurance coverage. And some of this you may know just from reading the paper or listening to the news. Some major provisions that matter to people with MS is that denials of coverage, literally the ability of an insurance company or an employer to say, no, you can't have our health insurance because you have a pre-existing condition, that will no longer be allowed at all. That will be completely illegal as of next January. There are some stopgap measures in the law right now so that it's much easier for people with pre-existing conditions even today to get health insurance than it was before the law took effect. but that complete prohibition of those denials doesn't kick in until next January. also, as I'm sure you're reading the paper, Medicaid, again, that federal and state program, is moving toward being much much greater safety net program for many more people through the Affordable Care Act. Prior to the act being signed, to become eligible for Medicaid in this country, you had to have an extremely low income. And the real problem also was that every single state got to determine what the eligibility criteria was for their state Medicaid program. So we kind of have 50 state Medicaid programs in this country. We don't have one. Through the Affordable Care Act, we're moving, and I'm saying this with my fingers crossed, we're moving to having one standardized eligibility criteria for Medicaid across the country. I say that I'm doing this with my fingers crossed because at the moment, every single state, as a result of the Supreme Court decision last summer, every single state gets to choose whether they want to expand their Medicaid eligibility to adopt the Affordable Care Act provision. We didn't see that coming when the law first was enacted. That was a decision by the Supreme Court. But the good news is that most states are coming on board, and I ultimately think every single state will come on board. So Medicaid is very likely to be a last resort for everybody. So the likelihood of not having any insurance at all is becoming almost nil. Some other provisions. There will be no lifetime caps on benefits. That means no health insurance policy can say, well, you've used all your benefits for the year, Mrs. Smith, I'm sorry, or for your whole lifetime. Your health insurance policy is pretty much meaningless now. That is now prohibited. The annual benefits on caps are being phased out as well. There will be certain kinds of caps on coverage that will still be in effect. These will be the kinds of caps, and we'll examine this more, on specific benefits. You may be familiar with these already. You may have a mental health benefit in your insurance coverage now of X number of visits in a certain period of time, X number of visits that are covered for perhaps physical therapy, and so on. Those kinds of caps will still be allowed in 2014 and beyond. But the dollar caps will be phased out completely. What we are all paying for health insurance in our premiums now have very tight new standards. And many of those standards have already taken effect. So we're all actually in the process of getting better value for the premium, for the actual health insurance that we pay for. There's a number of different provisions there. I'm not going to take the time to explain them all. But they're much more regulated than they ever have been before. And that's a very good thing for all of us. Also, as consumers of health insurance that need these policies to really keep our financial lives viable, it's been very complicated because health insurance is complicated, and we really have needed a lot of help, people like me, to help explain what health insurance is all about and to help troubleshoot when problems come up. That will get better as a result of the Affordable Care Act as well. All health insurance must be made basically explained with plain language and with a standardized use of terminology. Every health insurance policy now is supposed to be provided with a plain language description at your annual enrollment period. I'm talking about private and employer-based insurance. If you haven't had this, didn't see that the last time you went through your annual enrollment period with your employer, it may mean that your employer just hasn't gotten there yet, but they are supposed to comply with that. That is a legal requirement to provide something called the Summary of Benefits and Coverage. It's very simple language. It's got little diagrams. It even has case scenarios, so you can get some sense of how much would my policy really cover me for different things if I had certain kinds of catastrophic illnesses. MS is not one of the coverage examples, as we call them, but breast cancer and diabetes are a couple of the examples, and they're really very helpful. I'll go on to the next page then. Now I'm just going to review some of the same information in a slightly different way, just basically what the employer-based health insurance system has been like in this country before healthcare reform. Many of you know this from painful experience. Basically, employers for decades in this country have controlled who is eligible for health insurance, if they even provide health insurance as a benefit of employment. roughly in the country now. We're getting to the point where only about 50% of employers offer health insurance as a benefit of employment. That number has been going down steadily for the last 20 years or so. And also, employers even get to decide if they offer health insurance as a benefit, who will they extend that offer to? Is it only for the worker, or do they also are they generous enough to offer that as a benefit to the worker's spouse and dependent children? Those are all things that are up to the employer, and actually those will continue to be up to the employer to decide. Larger employers historically have offered coverage much more so than smaller employers. Smaller employers, just because of the cost burden of providing health insurance to employees and their families, have just been much less likely to be able to afford health insurance. But we think this is going to dramatically change as a result of the Affordable Care Act. Those who were ineligible for group coverage in the past that did not get health insurance from an employer, they very often were the ones that suffered the most from our very inadequate system. They had to go out onto the private market and try to buy their own health insurance if they were not yet in Medicare or Medicaid. And as you probably know, if you tried to buy health insurance on your own with any kind of a pre-existing condition, not even something as serious as MS, you were turned down unless you lived in a couple of very progressive states. But in most of the country, the great majority of states, health insurers were free to and did turn you down if you applied for health insurance and you had a pre-existing condition. That changes in January for everybody. As a result, also, that the laws that were on the books that help people maintain their coverage, and these are two complicated federal laws that you may have heard about, COBRA and HIPAA, you had to use those very carefully and really understand how those worked. They did have the effect of helping you maintain health insurance coverage for a time if you became unemployed or you lost your group coverage for any reason. Those laws actually will stay on the books after 2014, but in some ways they become a lot less significant because we don't need them as much as we did in the past, because you will not get denied coverage because you have a pre-existing condition. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. So on to the next page. So here's the after. We looked at the before, here's the after. The employer-based system after healthcare reform, as I mentioned before, employers still are not required to provide coverage, and a lot of people are confused about that. They think that the Affordable Care Act mandates that employers have to offer health insurance. In fact, that's not actually true, but the incentives for employers to offer health insurance are much greater, and frankly, the disincentives are pretty significant too. Larger employers will have a very strict, well, we're hoping a strict, a disincentive to not offer coverage. They will be penalized financially if they do not offer coverage, and it means that their employees have to go to buy health insurance on their own, and they get a subsidized health insurance policy from the government. That's what triggers a penalty for large employers. Large employers and small employers also get very nice tax breaks for offering health insurance coverage. So we're thinking that the combined effect of these things will be that employers do offer health insurance coverage. But there are still some real unknowns there, and I don't want to pretend otherwise. Just for your information, large employers, what does that mean? That generally means, because it comes up several different places in the law, for the purposes of this penalty, it means 50 employees or more. Smaller employers don't face those kinds of penalties, and they have very nice tax breaks for offering coverage if they want to. There is some uncertainty right now, especially around how many employers are likely to extend coverage, especially to spouses. There is an IRS rule right now that looks like the definition of family coverage for employer-based coverage means the worker and dependent children. This is all not finalized yet, so please do not think of this overall talk here as your tax advice, okay? Any more specific information about that, we can get for you at the time if it's necessary. And your first source of information on that, of course, would be your employer if your employer offers coverage. COBRA is still needed in 2014 and beyond. If and when you leave or you lose group health insurance coverage for any reason. COBRA, as you may know if you've exercised your COBRA rights in the past, is a federal law that allows anybody that works for a plan that has 20 or more employees to stay on the group coverage at their own expense for a certain period of time. If you have used your COBRA rights in the past, you may know that depending on the reason that you lost your group coverage or you moved away from the group for any reason, also determines how many months you may stay in that group coverage. So the amount of time you can COBRA your policy really varies significantly. Lots of different circumstances there. But it's a minimum of 18 months and it's a maximum of 36 months. And if you are the spouse or a dependent of the worker and lost your coverage because the worker lost their coverage, you also were given your own COBRA privilege. Those privileges stay in the books, but you probably are just not going to need to stay on COBRA and pay that expense because you have to pay that expense 100% yourself. You're probably not going to want to choose that in the future because you will be able to go shopping for your own health insurance policy through the health insurance exchanges. And if your income is lower, you will be able to apply for and find out if you qualify for a tax credit that will be applied to your premium bill immediately, effectively making health insurance available on a sliding scale basis. Another major federal law that stays on the books, despite the changes in health insurance, is the Family and Medical Leave Act. Family medical leave has been an important law and protection for people with MS and others for a number of years. That allows all of us the right to take up to 12 weeks of unpaid medical leave in a calendar year for the worker or for their own purposes or if they are a caregiver or have some other legitimate need to need some time away from work. But it is an unpaid medical leave. And also, it preserves your benefits while you're on that unpaid leave. It also preserves your job. You can go back to your job, provided that you have planned for it accordingly with your employer. Let's move on to the next slide then. Beyond the basic question of whether or not you're going to have health insurance, and now we know that you will be able to qualify for health insurance even with your MS or anything else. The other question that we focus on a lot, and this is where this question of whether or not you're underinsured comes in, is what benefits are actually going to be covered? Or the way that most people with MS or others just sort of think about this is, well, how good is my health insurance? Years ago, when I first started doing this, I'd worked in cancer, as you heard, and people often used to ask me, they would mention the name of a company, and they would say, is that good coverage? And the answer was, it doesn't matter. It's all about your plan and how much coverage your plan offers you. And that continues to be the same. There will be considerable concern about exactly what these health insurance plans are going to cover. Literally, how much of any benefit is going to be covered by the insurance plan as their responsibility versus your responsibility. And your responsibility is what we refer to as the out-of-pocket cost, and we're going to take a deeper dive into your specific costs in just a moment. But again, from the Affordable Care Act, you get some new protections. for any of us who end up buying health insurance after January 2014 through the health insurance exchanges, or you don't even have to buy them through the exchanges, you can go into the open market as an individual or as a small employer and shop for health insurance. You don't necessarily have to go to the exchange. There will be an open marketplace from which you can choose. But all of those plans for individuals and for small employers must cover what's now referred to as the essential health benefits. This is a basic definition or standards for coverage that was generally outlined in the Affordable Care Act in a very broad brush way, but 10 large buckets of benefits that must be included, and we are now in the process of further specifically defining exactly what those benefits are. Let me give you an example of what I mean by going from the very general description in the law to now something that is more specific. One of the 10 buckets, as I call them, is called Rehabilitative and Habilitative Services and Devices. Now, if you just roll that around in your head for a moment, you may realize that that includes all rehabilitation. That's physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and devices is all durable medical equipment. So that's a lot of potential things. It's also a lot of things that could be limited or excluded. So we're very concerned about whether or not medical devices, is that going to cover, you know, all kinds of wheelchairs that may be needed by people? Will it cover, you know, fancy things that have often not been included or very limited, like Hoyer lifts, and a whole wide range of things? It certainly does have to cover that physical, speech, and occupational therapy, but how limited will it be? How much will those limits on the numbers of times you can see your physical therapist and get services? How much is that going to impact your bottom line as the policyholder? These are all things that are now being determined, and it will be specific to your plan. So, yes, you will want to pay attention to those because those are the things that are going to cost you an out-of-pocket cost. There are also, though, general new standards for the minimum coverage. As you all know, because it's been so controversial, the law does mandate that, with exceptions, but generally, almost every person in the country has to have health insurance or begin to pay a fine in their taxes as of year 2015. You have to have the coverage in 2014 so you don't start to pay a penalty when you pay those taxes in year 2015. So what does that mean? You have to have health insurance coverage. If you're going to have a mandate like that on everybody, you have to define what the minimum coverage is. The idea is that we all participate in this equally. We have a level playing field. So we have to have a fairly robust health insurance policy to qualify for that minimum, and that is the minimum coverage standard. Very generally, I can tell you that for those of you, and most of you, I think, on the phone probably fall into this category, that have had or do currently have employer-based coverage, most of those policies are actually fairly similar, a little bit more similar than I think a lot of us thought they would be when we started this process. The health insurance is going to be available to you going forward to all of us, even if we lose coverage and we have to buy it through the health insurance exchange or elsewhere. It's going to be, and this is literally the language in the law, quote unquote, like a typical employer-based plan. So for all that's good about employer-based plans and all that's bad about some employer-based plans, that's going to be the standard. That's what you can look forward to. A lot of the trends that we're seeing in health insurance today, over the last several years especially, those will continue. There will be higher deductibles. That's been, unfortunately, kind of an encroaching process and trend in recent years. The use of high deductible health insurance plans with the health savings accounts, those will likely increase. Unfortunately, also more cost shifting to enrollees. More and more evidence that, and I guess it's not surprising, but basically the idea here is the more people have to pay out of pocket for their own health healthcare costs, the better choices they make. Now, we could argue about that forever, and I often do, about whether or not people really have choices when the pocketbook is getting squeezed so much. Are they making choices based on, you know, better or higher quality care, or are they just making choices that they can't pay for it, so they just don't get it? But nonetheless, I just want to point that out, that continued shift will continue. Some good news, though. One of the nice provisions of the Affordable Care Act is that major preventive services generally think of as vaccines, cancer, all the cancer screenings, all kinds of things. Those will be covered at what we call first dollar coverage. That means you don't have to pay toward a deductible or any copay at all for what are considered the recommended preventive health services. The whole point of that is to make health insurance something valuable that actually might help us keep healthy. Rather than just having a sickness system, we're trying to evolve this into more of a health system. And that's a major addition and enhancement to the health insurance system. There are specific preventive services. I didn't bother to put the link in there, but we can certainly provide that information to you in the future if you're interested. And that, again, that That provision attaches to all kinds of health insurance, including Medicare and Medicaid. Our wellness program, some of you may be aware of, has been a growing trend, especially in employer-based coverage. There are incentives in the Affordable Care Act, especially for employers, to offer wellness programs in their benefit package, and there may be some cost benefits to you to enroll in a wellness program. We could do an entire webinar on those, but we're not doing that tonight. You might also be aware of the term, new one, value-based insurance designs. They may or may not creep up in your health insurance, but just something to be aware of. The idea here is that if you have a certain chronic illnesses, the health plan may give you a certain incentive to change your behavior in some way. And this mainly is something that is a benefit or is being used more with people with conditions like diabetes, perhaps smoking, obesity, things like that. You change the behavior, you give them some sort of incentive, which might be like a lower copay or lower premium, to actually change their behavior to get healthier. You will see that probably see more and more of those in health insurance. There's only one example of that now that's specific to MS, and it does not seem to be really taking off as kind of a major thing. I think that still has a while to go before it becomes a major issue in MS. On your next slide, we're going to look at understanding your costs. And these are just the basic categories of the costs that you are still likely to incur. Just because the terminology here is important. And as if and when you're ever shopping for health insurance or you just want to look at your own policy and understand exactly what's covered and what isn't, bottom line is you want to understand your bottom line. So that means your costs. These are points of could be points of comparison if you're ever shopping for health insurance and you actually get to choose between different kinds of policies that are available to you and your family. So the kinds of costs you have. Of course, premiums. Premium is literally what you pay to be able to have health insurance. Right now, if you have employer-based coverage, your employer, of course, is paying the lion's share of the premium, and most employees are paying a much smaller portion. I think the national standard now is probably in the ballpark of maybe 15 to 25% is the cost for the employee themselves. The deductible, of course, is the amount that you have to pay at the beginning of either your plan year or your calendar year. In a lot of health plans, the plan year and the calendar year are the same thing. In my health insurance plan, the calendar year is the plan year. That means January 1, I have a new deductible to face. I don't get anything covered by my health insurance plan until I have incurred expenses for out of network, I think of $1,250 this year. and those deductibles vary by plan. They vary quite a bit. And also the other out-of-pocket cost that really matters an awful lot to all of us, not just people with MS, and this is where costs really unfortunately can hurt us, is the portion of a certain service or item or medicine that is not covered. There could be a copay. Copay is a fixed dollar amount. Usually copays were typical for a lot of more general medications that were covered under your prescription drug plan. It used to be pretty nominal, maybe $10 or $20. Increasingly now maybe $50 for a non-preferred drug on your health insurance plan. Unfortunately, we've also seen a creep and trend in recent years where rather than having a fixed dollar copay as your cost share, we're now seeing co-insurance, meaning your out-of-pocket cost is a percentage of the total. And that's unfortunate because the percentage of something very expensive like your MS drugs is a lot of money. On the other side, as I mentioned before, everybody's health insurance plan, the benefits also often have limits. There are no premium limits for employees' share. Right now, your portion of the premium probably can vary quite a bit depending on what your employer plan is. There will be certain limits after 2014. And As I mentioned, I may have mentioned before, if and when you have to buy your own health insurance policy, it is effectively on a sliding scale because you will get tax credits that are applied immediately, actually before you pay the premium. Those tax credits will be available to anyone, and this is based on your adjusted gross income, whose income is at or below 400% of the federal poverty level, and that's for an individual. So, of course, that would be adjusted accordingly, depending on the number of people in the household and so forth. But 400% of the federal poverty level is pretty good. That gets us to an awful lot of people in this population. Just limits on the deductible. There are some limits on the deductibles from the Affordable Care Act. If you're in a small employer-based plan, there is a $2,000 cap on deductible annually for individual workers, or $4,000 annual cap on deductible for family coverage. There are certain caps on copays and coinsurance and those other things for pretty much everybody going forward in 2014. It's going to sound pretty high. Some of you may have an annual cap now that may be in the range of $1,000 or $2,000 a year. Some of you may have a much, much higher cap. Again, the effort here is to sort of level the playing ground. The cap will generally be about $6,250 in the first year, 2014, or about $12,000 for family coverage in 2014. Those amounts will go up as years go by because they are benchmarked to the increase in premiums themselves. Okay, last couple of slides. We've got to wrap it up quickly here. So the bottom lines here is health insurance is going to be accessible to everybody. Your risk of being uninsured is pretty much gone. There are exceptions. There are certain people that will be exempt from this federal mandate that everybody has to have insurance. But if you want health insurance, you can certainly get it. And presumably it's affordable for you, no matter what your circumstances, because of the sliding scale and because of Medicaid being more accessible to everybody. Employers will be more likely to provide coverage to workers, and we'll just have to see exactly how that plays out over time. Anybody that's not eligible for employer coverage can buy it on their own. No limits on their pre-existing conditions. I mentioned the tax credits. Medicaid is the safety net. Medicare eligibility is absolutely unchanged by the Affordable Care Act. Despite all the drama and all the worry, Medicare, frankly, doesn't change very much at all as a result of the Affordable Care Act. If anything, it gets better because Medicare beneficiaries get some new benefits. So it's actually a very good thing for Medicare beneficiaries. but unfortunately, the risk of being underinsured is still pretty great. I don't think people with MS are going to face medical bankruptcy. I think that's very unlikely. But unfortunately, a lot of the financial hardship from all those, the premiums, the deductibles, and especially those copays, is still a real thing. Your planning opportunities moving forward. You do need to plan ahead for changes in your coverage. If and when you leave that group coverage, you have to use your COBRA benefits, and you have to use them very carefully. We want to make sure that everybody goes transitions very seamlessly. The point here, the objective, is don't be uninsured for a single day. So you need to work with your employer or your union, wherever you get your group-based insurance, if you have to leave it, to make sure that you are electing your COBRA coverage on time, that you understand exactly what the effective date is, the last day of group coverage from the employer, the first day of group coverage that you are now paying for yourself under COBRA. if and when you had to be totally uninsured, or if you chose not to be insured at all, because, of course, you don't have to be. You can choose to not be insured, but you will face a tax penalty if you are uninsured for 3 months or more. And that begins, as I said, with tax year 2015. You may know another nice provision of the law is that young adults, if you're a young adult yourself under the age of 26, or you have a young adult in your life, that's your own child, they can stay on mom or dad's employer-based coverage until they are age 26. That little provision has now provided health insurance to literally millions of young adults in this country that didn't have it before, even as long ago as a year ago. But plan for the longer term, too. We can do more work on this. You can call us and try to get some help, but do plan for life insurance Long-term care insurance, if you can get it, it's you're probably not going to be able to get it on your own after a diagnosis with MS. Some employers offer long-term care insurance as a benefit of coverage. Some of them also offer private disability insurance as a benefit of coverage. Please, 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 if you get that offer from an employer, take it immediately. Because if you don't take it immediately, if the employer offers it again, maybe the next open enrollment cycle or something, they can and they will do a medical screening, and you may not be eligible for it at that point if you have MS. So that's just a little tip to always keep in mind and pass on to your friends. Please understand the implications of early retirement and plan very wisely. Some of you may know that if you plan for early retirement and you leave the workforce, you're thinking that Medicare will ultimately be your health insurer, and that's fine. You can certainly plan on that. You may know that you have to be on Social Security disability insurance for 24 months, a full 2 years, before you're eligible for Medicare. And that's had been a very painful thing, because that means the only way in the past you could get health insurance was to stay on COBRA through that whole 2 year period, and COBRA meant you had to pay all the health insurance costs yourself. So a lot of people with MS and other conditions would become uninsured because they couldn't afford it. You don't have to face that now, because the worst case scenario is you go to the health insurance exchange, you apply for the tax credit, and hopefully you get affordable coverage that will take you right up to your Medicare eligibility. So no more horrible gaps like that. But do plan accordingly. These are not easy things, even in the best case scenario. So just get information, work with us and some other resources, and be a very demanding consumer. My best advice to you is to make sure that you're getting the best value out of whatever coverage you do have. So please make sure you understand what you have, understand what your options are, not only for coverage but for your care. Understand and use wisely things like your in-network benefits. If you want to use out-of-network benefits, fine, but try to make that as rare as possible, because your out-of-pocket costs for those are going to be high. Use generic drugs whenever possible. Use your preventive and wellness benefits if they're helpful to you. Just be a very informed consumer. If something that your doctor thinks is medically necessary gets denied, please use your appeal rights, and we can help you. We do a lot of work helping people appeal anything that is limited or denied. Finally, just a couple of resources. The federal government's main resource explaining the law and many of different provisions in very simple, understandable terms is the website www.healthcare.gov. Also, any of you are small business owners or work for small businesses and you're concerned about more of the provisions as they relate specifically to small businesses, there is an organization called the Small Business Majority. They're doing a lot of work on implementing and explaining the Affordable Care Act. Use the MS Society. We have several people in our call center in Denver that are specialized in health insurance and other types of insurance. Happy to take your calls, so please call us and talk to an MS navigator. That phone number is 1-800-FIGHT-MS, F-I-G-H-T-M-S. And also, remember that these are government programs. These are legal protections. So another great resource, if you're unsure about how legal protections work, are the federal agencies that administer these laws. So if it's an employment-related question, the Department of Employment, they're there, and they have regional offices and 800 numbers, as well as the IRS. They have the same thing. So feel free to call them and use them. I do it all the time. And with that, I went a little over. I'm sorry, but I'm going to turn it over now to Q&A.
Thanks so much, Kim. Okay, Don, I think that we're ready.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Joseph. Joseph, please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. That was a wonderful explanation of how the Affordable Care Act itself might affect things, especially with people with MS, but in general. But I'd like to ask you questions from a different direction on it. For someone who's considering or facing changing employment, either leaving the workforce or going to a new job, and let's focus from 2014 on, because I know it's going to change. What are the questions that we need to ask ourselves at this point?
In terms of health insurance, that's a very good question.
In terms of health insurance,
yeah.
You know, how it may be impacted and what our choices mm-hmm. are,
sure.
what our risks are as well.
Sure. Good question. If you are going from one employer to another, or you're going basically from one group health insurance to another group health insurance, what you want to know, what you want to get your hands on, as much detail as possible about the potential employer's group health insurance plans, and make a comparison to what you already have. There is no harm in asking for as much information as possible. I know that has been, some people are very uncomfortable asking for that information. There really isn't a provision in the law that mandates that employers have to offer this health, have to offer a lot of fine details. But I'm hoping that with this requirement that they do have to on an annual basis to provide this summary of benefits and coverage, you will be able to see in simple format what's covered and what isn't covered. Literally, I mean, how much of my doctor's bill would be covered? What percentage? And what percentage is my responsibility? You know, what is the percentage of coverage for rehab therapies? What is the percentage of coverage for prescription drugs? What is the provision for specialty drugs, which is probably going to be important to you with MS? Anything else that may be under there about durable medical equipment or other medically necessary services and items that you have now? You should be able to get that information, and I would encourage you to ask it confidently. Please don't feel that asking the question is going to be harmful to you in any way. I hope that was generally helpful to you.
Don, next question.
Our next question comes from Nick. Nick, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the information. I would like to know what the income limit is to get to qualify for tax credits under the Affordable Care Act.
The tax credits will be available for individuals that are at or below 400% of the federal poverty level. The federal poverty level for an individual today is about $12,000, so 400% of the federal poverty level today is about $48,000. Now, that would obviously be different depending on how many people you have in the household. And I don't have those charts in front of me at the moment, but, you know, for a household of, you know, a worker, a spouse, and maybe a couple of children, tax credits will be available even for your income up to, well, I don't have them right in front of me, but it's generous. It's $75,000, $80,000 a year or so. I'd be happy to provide you with that information if you want to give me an email address or something. We can just, you know, provide you with detailed link to that information. You could also probably find that on that website, healthcare.gov.
Our next question comes from Kiona.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I was recently diagnosed with MS April of last year, and I was in school. And I just left my job in February because I have to do an internship for school. Now, I applied for Medicaid, and I got it. Now, should I worry about anything with COBRA for my job when I get the offering? And also, too, my job offered me an expect to keep my life insurance that I had through them out of my own pocket. Should I go for that too?
Mm-hmm. Those are great questions, Kiana. Really good questions. I'm delighted to hear that you're getting a job and they've got health insurance and that they're going to make an offer to you. I would recommend that you, to make the smoothest transition possible, you call our 800 number and just work that through with one of our MS navigators. But it sounds like you're going to be fine. You're going to be able to make a nice, smooth transition. In terms of life insurance, that's sort of an individual decision. Again, that's something you might want to work through with either one of our MS navigators or a financial planner. Life insurance is a nice thing to have for different reasons. It may be, you know, sort of a nice investment vehicle for you in the future.
since we started a couple minutes later, if it's okay, Kim, if we can maybe take just a few more questions, maybe go over by about five minutes or so. Is that okay?
Sure.
Great. Okay. Don, then we can go ahead and take another question.
Okay. Our next question comes from Susan. Susan, please go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know more about the preventative care discovered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I don't have the link. I didn't put it in the slides, but there's a wide range of preventive health services. They have to be recommended by what's basically a very high level, kind of blue ribbon panel. So it's not absolutely anything preventive, but it's a lot of the things that you would think of that are sort of logical. Colorectal cancer screenings, blood pressure checks, even depression screening for elderly, women's health kinds of things. You probably could, if you have access to a computer, again, that website, healthcare.gov, if you can just use the search bar and pull and just type in preventive services or health services, you should get the whole list. Or contact us and we can send you that information. Good question. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Felicia.
Hello. I ran into the situation where I was going on disability, but due to the income that I was unable to get a report of, that my income did from disability didn't start, I was unable to qualify for any type of Medicaid or health insurance of any way. I was just wondering, can you start COBRA benefits before you go on disability or what?
Yes, you can. I think I'm going to have to recommend that you call one of our MS navigators, because it sounds like this is pretty specific to you, and I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to guide you the wrong way, because I'm not quite exactly sure what kind of health insurance you have now or before you went on disability or trying to get on disability. So forgive me for that, but I think you'll be better off if you call our 1-800-FIGHT-MS and go through your exact situation and all of your different questions with somebody there, okay?
Our next question comes from Mary. Mary, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I am a 55-year-old PE teacher, and I was able to get disability insurance private right before I got diagnosed with MS. I've tried to get long-term health care insurance, but has been turned down because of my MS. Should I be trying to increase my private disability insurance, or will I ever be able to get long-term health care insurance?
Whether or not you should increase your disability insurance, that's kind of a financial planning question. I guess my gut sense is it probably wouldn't hurt. It's hard to give really general information like that. I don't know whether or not you'd be eligible for even more disability insurance, but you could try it. In terms of long-term care insurance, the likelihood that you're going to get a policy after being diagnosed with MS is almost nil. But also, I do want to just reassure everyone that private disability insurance is not the only disability insurance system in the country. We also have Social Security disability insurance, and that's eligible for most people in the country based on the amount of what their work history has been. And I'm sure Steve and others probably have shared resources, maybe an entire call on Social Security disability insurance. And if not, we can certainly make that information available to you.
Our next question comes from Mark.
Yes, good evening. Thank you so much for your information. The fuzziness around coverage for spouses, you touched upon that a couple times in your presentation, and I wanted to make sure I understood that is because of the way that the IRS may be qualifying families is the reason why spouses potentially could be opted out of coverage from an employer, and you need to go out in the open market and procure your own insurance at that point in time. Am I correct in my understanding the way that you presented it?
Yes, that is my understanding, and this is all you know, we don't know what's going to happen yet. This is just forecasting about, you know, way trends could go. But yes, that's my understanding. It's all about, you know, how employers respond to certain incentives or disincentives, or how they perceive the tax structure being incentives or disincentives.
John, maybe we have time for just one more question, please.
Okay. Our last question comes from Maria.
Hi, thank you for presenting what you did. Actually, my question is pretty relevant to the last question that was asked. The question is, I'm concerned that large employers, and I'm talking not 50 or more, but 10,000 or more. I work for a governmental agency. New York City, basically, is my employer. Mm-hmm. And the concern is that the penalty for the city will be less money than it would to cover the employees. So the question is, I guess, do you know of anything put in the law that say large employers such as municipalities, New York City, for instance, are not allowed to opt out of covering their employees?
No, there's not. There again, there is no requirement in the law. There's nothing in the law that compels employers to offer health insurance coverage. There are incentives for them to offer health insurance coverage. You'll even, and a lot of people interpret that as the employer mandate. I just went to some pains to explain that it's not literally a mandate, or sometimes referred to as a soft mandate, just to make something of a distinction. But no, the short answer to your question is no. I'm not too worried about you, though. The likelihood that very large employers that have historically offered health insurance coverage are going to back away, I think at this point is pretty safe for me to say that's not likely to happen. Even when they did, you know, many years from now, again, there is an entire infrastructure being built up now to provide a safety net of accessible and hopefully affordable coverage for everybody.
Thank you so much, Kim, for taking all those questions. I know we all gave our contact information at the beginning of the call, but just in case people came on late, I wanted to give my contact information again if we didn't get to your question. Besides calling the 1-800 number, which Kim had mentioned, definitely that can be a great kind of first-line call for you. But if you want to get in touch with me directly, again, my contact information is 202-296-5363 or steve.nissen, it's N as in Nancy, I-S-S-E-N, at nmss.org. Kim, I want to thank you so much for joining us this evening. I know that I learned a lot myself, and I'm sure that everybody else on the call did too. And if people could just stay on the line for just a couple more minutes, we do just have six brief polling questions for you tonight too. So,
well, thank you all very much. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Hey, Don, I think we're ready for the polling.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the polling portion of our conference call. The first question is, are you currently working? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Again, are you currently working? 1 for yes, 2 for no. Please hold while the results come in. Okay. Our second question. How would you rate the speaker? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? Again, how would you rate the speaker? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, 4 for poor. Please hold while the results are tallied. Our third question. How would you rate the content of the program? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? Again, how would you rate the content of the program? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? Please hold while the results are tallied. Our fourth question. As a result of this teleconference, I learned about insurance protections available to me. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3 for disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I learned about insurance protections available to me. 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, 3 for disagree. Please hold while the answers are tallied. Okay. Our fifth question. As a result of this teleconference, I gained insight into how the Affordable Health Care Act will change insurance coverage. 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3 for disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I gained insight into how the Affordable Health Care Act will change insurance coverage. 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, 3 for disagree. Please hold while the results are tallied. Our last question. As a result of this teleconference, I am more informed about the insurance benefits to investigate when considering a change in my employment situation. 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3 for disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I am more informed about the insurance benefits to investigate when considering a change in my employment situation. 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, 3 for disagree. Please hold while the results are tallied. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the polling portion of your call. You may all disconnect.